Thank you. So this paper has multiple authors reflecting the involvement of many people that have jumped into it. And unlike the story that we heard from Bob Huttmacher, the Texas story is relatively new, and we are in the process of gathering information. In the course of my talk, I'm giving opinions which are primarily mine, and I'll take responsibility for that. So my own personal involvement with FOV4 was tagging along on a trip with Jason Woodward and Bob Nichols in 2017, and this is what we were seeing in terms of some of the fields that were affected by FOV4 with massive amounts of stand loss. And growers, according to Orlando Flores, the county agent, growers had reported a problem in 2016, but anyone that understands how soil-borne pathogens like Fusarium works, this thing has obviously been around for many years prior to that. So, and part of the reason for the public sector pathologist A&M not being involved is frankly a lack of people on the ground. We are really spread out thin. I'm 10 hours away from El Paso. Jason is 5 hours away, and they don't have plant pathologists all over the place. And actually, they used to have an IPM agent, and that position was vacant for probably the critical period of time during the introduction of the disease. So in going around doing an informal survey, we are seeing fields like this. We are also seeing fields with gaps here, and this is what I point out for growers, that this is what you should pay attention to get people involved in looking at it and making a better determination. And Jason had done more extensive surveying in 2018, early, or I'm sorry, 2017 as well. I'm only starting to get into that now that he's has left the A&M system. Being an extension educator, my goal is to make people aware of the problem and really take a proactive approach to dealing with it. And I'm always straddling a fine line between informing people and being accused of stirring up the pot and creating a frenzy. And this, it's not just FOV4. I've been down this road for other diseases, other invasive diseases that have happened in Texas. So I'm pretty used to it, but we just got to plug away and do our job. So this is the situation right now. The disease has been confirmed in two far west counties, El Paso, Hudspeth County, circled there. And the cotton acreage there is it's around 40,000 acres. It represents about 0.6% of cotton production in Texas. So it's not a major player. And this is where most of the Pima cotton is grown in the state, although there's pockets of Pima grown in spots around the state as well. And about two-thirds of the cotton grown in this particular production area is actually upland cotton. This map here shows the production of cotton by county based on the number of bales. So you can see here that the El Paso, Hudspeth counties are not really major producers of cotton. But, of course, the concern is there is an interaction between growers there and the industry there and other parts of the state, particularly the southern high plains shown with all those red counties where a lot of most of the upland cotton is produced. And that's of significant importance. And Jason was based there, and he was trying to target producers in that area with educational programs in terms of movement of equipment, for example, module builders. And we're finding there's still an ongoing acquisition of information about what's going on. For me, it's also an informative thing about how they produce cotton in far west Texas. So as I see it, our objectives in dealing with this problem is first to find out how extensive the problem is through surveys and such, to limit its movement and educate the industry. And that's primarily an educational effort from my standpoint. And there's already efforts to proactively manage it, primarily through screening for germplasm for resistance. So first, finding out where it is. We don't have the resources to do extensive surveys. My understanding is that extensive surveys have been done in Arizona, for example. We concentrate in the El Paso area, and there's been a lot of surveying there. In terms of outside of this area, it's been more of an ad hoc. We find out who's growing Pima, check at those fields, but as you've heard earlier, well, it's not exclusively a Pima disease. But those would be, our concern is if there's brown bag seed movement out of this area into other areas. As far as I know, talking with growers and such, they'll buy commercial seed and it's not produced in this area. So that's really a good news, unless, of course, the seed comes from an area where FOB4 is present. So we have the surveys, more extensive surveys in El Paso and Huntsville counties. And lately, for the past 2 years, Chenghai Yang with the USDA has been doing remote surveys in this area, more intensive. And this is good. If we can find that this method is very effective in detecting, then we can start flying over the rest of the state in key production areas to figure out what's going on there. Otherwise, surveys have been ad hoc. For example, whenever I get calls about, we have some stand loss, what's going on? I will go out and check it out. And, for example, this is something I saw last year, bare ground. They couldn't attribute it to any particular cause, so I was called in. It turned out, in this case, to be very high populations of reniform nematode. And, the FOV4 does look like damping off, and damping off caused by Rhizoctonia occurs much more frequently around the state. So we're still putting out the call to send us samples or let us know what's going on to check that out. I do know from these observations and these particular damped off plants were from our trial in El Paso, and every single seedling that I plated out yielded Fusarium. None of them yielded Rhizoctonia or other soil-borne pathogens. So that for me was an educational experience, seeing how this thing worked in the field. And also, as pointed out by Bob Huttmacher, you don't always see classic wilt symptoms on plants, particularly on the upland variety. So this is also a confounding thing and factor in the diagnosis. And another factor involved is that there's already at least one other race, Fusarium wilt, in the high plains. That's where it's more prevalent. It is associated with vascular discoloration of the stem and root knot nematode infestation. Terry Wheeler has been working on this for some time now. We don't really have Fusarium wilt in other parts of the state where cotton is grown. And, of course, the issue with FOV4 compared to other races is you can isolate it on a plate. The morphology is the same, and this could be a watermelon wilt fusarium for all you know from looking at it. It really does require some additional testing. And from my standpoint, I'm pleased that there's availability of a testing kit through Agdia, which is pretty simple to use, kind of expensive, so I wouldn't do it for routine testing, but also personally, I'm fortunate that there is a USDA lab just literally down the road from me, where if I have any questions, okay, what race is this, or so I can get that checked out. So next strategy is to limit the movement, and we ask the question: can FOV4 be walled in this two county area? Personally, I'm somewhat optimistic that can happen, assuming, you know, if we limit the spread through educational efforts. And one of our recommendations is to tell growers, do not use brown bag seed. And the growers in that area that grow Pima cotton, this is something they use quite commonly. And this is a photograph of some brown bag seed that Jason and I plated out independently. We actually had a 1 to 2% incidence of Fusarium growing out of the seed, so that would be a consideration. Movement of dirty implements, and this is probably more of a consideration within this two-county area rather than long distance. As I mentioned earlier, there's also concern about movement of module builders and seed associated with that. And, of course, the gin trash and manure has also been discussed. So educational efforts for the industry. We're really getting going on this. Jason had given a lot of talks up in the high plains His position is vacant, but between Terry Wheeler and I, we're going to be giving some talks up there. And, of course, around the state, I'm giving talks as well. The man on the ground is Orlando Flores, shown here, the county agent. So he's been instrumental in getting the A&M plant pathologists involved in this problem. Meanwhile, we have developed an educational bulletin. And in terms of what is Texas A&M doing, they're finally going through the process of refilling the vacant IPM position for that area, which should go a long way in at least doing the applied research for dealing with this problem in that particular area. So what is being done to manage it? Well, right now there are commercial Pima varieties known to be tolerant to this disease, and this is a photograph of a strip trial that we saw in 2017 showing a resistant or relatively resistant variety and a susceptible Pima variety. And so what has happened this year is that a lot of the growers in that two-county area have started growing tolerant Pima varieties to the extent we're not seeing these bare spots in the field anymore, and it's also making it more difficult to find potential nursery sites for research. The other thing that's happening, and I don't quite have a handle on it, is that there is a movement to non-susceptible crops. So this is not like California where they can grow all sorts of vegetables in rotation. They grow primarily alfalfa, and I understand there's a little bit of wheat production, but the bigger crop there is pecans, and that tends, my impression is it's a growing crop, and that's taking a lot of cotton field out of permanent production, which is good from a disease management standpoint in terms of keeping that in place. Meanwhile, the A&M group has done some screening. Jason had arranged a large block for all sorts of trials. Terry Wheeler had coordinated our breeders, Jane Deaver, Wayne Smith, and Steve Haig, and also Jinfra from New Mexico State to evaluate resistant upland varieties. So this is a photograph of setting up that particular trial back in May of last year. And we've not had a lot of experience with the production system that's used in the El Paso area. So it was quite challenging to have to make adjustments on the planter and deal with, this whole row didn't get planted because of the thing not working correctly. But nevertheless, there was some stand, and we could make assessments on it. And there was harvestable cotton later on in the season shown here when we went out there to hand harvest one of the trials. And I don't really have good data. So I inherited Jason's commercial upland variety evaluation program when he left. And in this particular trial, this is my own interpretation of the results. It's just based on root discoloration. We also have stand loss on it. We also have some yield data, but the yield data is pretty much all over the place. But the good news, and this is my message for the grower, that this disease, at least with upland cotton, is manageable just through whatever's commercially available on about a third of the varieties. We didn't really see any symptoms at all, and there's only 17 out of the total that actually had quite a lot of symptoms. This went across all companies, so in all the three categories. The only problem with this data is that it's based on two replicates because the field did have an uneven distribution of the fungus. So that's, you really need a uniformly infested field. You can't always get that when you want it. So pretty much that's our story. We are plugging on for next year with the evaluations and have some other experiments in mind. That's where we stand. I'm hopeful that this just does not expand in occurrence either in Texas or in other growing areas. And with that, we have plenty of time for questions.
You got 5 minutes.
But probably some of the other people would have been better for getting these questions, but I'll be happy to answer any.
A room full of people would experience, so we're we're at a kind of a break here in talking about the history of the disease and the management. So we've got a full 5 minutes here if we want to question aspects of anything about this disease and our experience. They're just bubbling over, Tom. There's
all right, Bob.
I asked this question yesterday, but just that, so some confirmed widely spread in California, but there's also cotton production in Arizona, and I guess there's a little bit in New Mexico. So it's however it came. Has there been any survey in Mexico of cotton production in Mexico? Did it come through seed or did it come?
Well, yeah, that's Jinfa, you want to say something there?
Well, Jinfa, okay, we got to say something, lest we get on the wrong foot. We're going to have a presentation on Qinghai Yang's data. Are we being recorded?
Yes, we are.
We can see it in Mexico from the air.
You can see it in the air?
Yes.
So,
I'll stand for that. That's my interpretation.
Well, it wouldn't surprise. Again, it would probably be very regional. There's movement across the border. I've seen that in South Texas as well. There's some people can farm both Texas and Mexico. That wouldn't be impossible.
Let me finish my sentence.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Okay. I don't know about that, Chase.
Can I?
Yeah.
So, we know it's bad in California, now it's bad in El Paso. Yeah, in New Mexico, we're just very lucky. Okay? So, is that great? So we did the survey in 2017, we also did more survey than in 2018 last year. So myself, I wanted to maybe work in different field in my city of Denver. So I did I was able to find some of the disease infected plants. We really didn't know what those diseases were. So
Jennifer, could you stand up and face us?
We played. This is my student, PhD student, so I'm not reading. So she's a pathologist by training, okay? So I'm a breeder. I do not know about pathology.
Jinfa, you only have 2 minutes for this lecture.
She had a presentation this morning.
Wonderful.
We're talking about the genetic test. So we will see. Okay,
do you have it in New Mexico or not?
So far, we really have not identified.
But as I said yesterday, we did see some symptoms on plants right across the border with Texas that were consistent with it.
So we needed to do more work.
We need to survey New Mexico.
Not Texas. We're not going over there anymore. We're
going
done.
To Mexico, but we're coming to you.
Why are you going to Mexico?
Pardon?
What's that?
Why aren't you going to Mexico?
I've been there, done that with soybeans.
We could say Kimmeray.
Who got those to New Mexico from Texas, from your guys, okay?
Yeah, that's bigger.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate that.
In 2016, we identified at least 20 fields from the Texas border up to Las Cruces. It's in New Mexico.
So I differentiate between introduction, recognition, and confirmation.
Yes.
All right? There are some of us that believe we recognize it across the border. Okay? We have to sample those fields and actually do the work. Any other question? They've quieted. All right, we have, as we said, Maurizio Loyola, who has excellent experience in this, was going to leave this section. And he's not here, so you got stuck with me. So the next paper is a group of us, Jengao Yu is a senior out there. Al Bell, obviously, is the venerable Dr. Bell, I think known to all of us. I'm getting tired of being wrong in my discussions with Dr. Bell, although I appreciate him. Aizian Gu, Jim Olby contributed collections here. Tanya Wagner works in their lab. Javan Tavashilov, an Uzbek collaborator who we've got in this as well. Sandra Prom, Jose Quintana, and my humble self. So, I suppose, because of the government shutdown, Jengao has been unable to communicate with us. So, what has transpired here? I've collaborated with this lab, USDA lab, for some time, and we have a very general theory. And it is this, that there is probably continuous variation in FOV, that is Fusarium oxysporum vas infectum. If you wish to make this two modal types, you can, and we can verify that by VCG, vegetative compatibility. There's an 001 group and there's an 0014 group. In general, the 001 group basically is a wilt disease. This is what is usually involving nematodes. We're seeing overall, the only thing I do that's halfway worthwhile is a couple of things maybe, but I run all over the belt and look at everything. So we tend to have pathologists to see problems in their state or maybe adjacent states. I tend to see it all and go, oh my goodness, this is really a mess. So what I think we have overall over the last decade is a general shift to Fusaria that are more virulent in that they tend to hit the plant earlier and cause death earlier, whereas the ones that are associated with nematode tend to come on later. We have never really controlled this disease other than controlling the nematode. So what we have done, classic biological void, we push the disease towards the earlier root rotting types. So the FOV1 group is really a, and this is beyond what we've formally published, but the FOV1 group is really a wilt disease. The VCG14 group is very much a root rotting disease associated with alkaline soils. You don't have the 14, well, you know what. This, I'm speaking to Australian pathologists who are visiting us now. They have a different set of genotypes, but they are clearly the root rotting type, and they're clearly in arid, alkaline, thermophilic soils. That's where this group seems to be. How far it can go, we don't know. Here is the general problem. If you have a new pest, you have to understand what it is, and you have to be able to effectively name it. All right? And that you definitely need that when you go into the grower community because you need to effectively tell him what he's got or she's got, whoever the owner has to be or the operator has to be, and be able to speak about it in a consistent and meaningful way. So the classification of the FOVs historically was by a differential panel of hosts. All right? That's historical. Most of those hosts, a lot of those cultivars aren't even available. The VCG method is difficult. Basically, very few people want to do it except Al Bell. Al loves it. What it does is definitively give you differentiation on karyotype and the genes for compatibility and reproduction, all right? Which is not everything. What we really need to have here is a basic hypothesis of how that disease works, what genes are involved, and how we associate those genes in virulence. When we have that, we will have a real classification system and a lot of other things besides. Okay, Lebo is going to talk about that next, how we're getting there. What we have right now is a kind of an evolution from an alpha taxonomy, classical taxonomy, you know, the SOS differentiation stuff, to molecular base, which is PCR. I don't want to try to go through the whole evolution of that. Bob, when you and I talked to then Representative Cochran's staff about this, Mike and I summarized that for USDA. basically a collection of material was found to segregate in four genes. And this is what we talk about as the PCR system. All right. The screener is typically alpha elongation factor. It has misled us because we now know that there is segregation between that gene or types of that gene and the pathotypes. They vary in virulence. You can have the alpha elongation factor and have a moderate pathogen. All right. This is what we found and published in Plant Disease in 2017. That's Vell et al. Based on a major collection made by Bob Kemmerer, called erroneously the Louisiana collections, because Collier actually sent that in during the Cianceta survey. Okay, the Louisiana ones, the really nasty virulent ones, are from Georgia, and they are FOV1, and they are early killers. Okay, they tend to resemble root rotters, although they're on acid soils and they are nematode vectored in some cases. They don't seem to be nematode vectored in all cases, and that is very controversial. And I didn't even time myself, so I don't know how long I talked. But the bottom line of the paper that we sent to Plant Disease, it's still in review, that Jen Gao was going to show here, is that we have adaptive radiation. We don't know how diverse the four is in Asia. It is probably quite diverse. And it's considered to be redundant with 7, may overlap with 7, but can be distinguished by PCR in the phosphate permease gene from 7. That's a further development of the Ortiz work that has been cited here. This is what we conclude. I can't show you the data for it. Jen Gao has it. But what has happened initially, we felt, Mike felt, Mike Davis felt, I believed him, because Mike Davis is truly expert, that we were looking at a clonal type, which is very consistent with adaptive radiation. Something comes in from Asia, the same thing spreads around. Unfortunately, it has now mutated. So that what Margaret was showing us, in fact, has happened. That is a 14 type, we believe, and it is a second form of 4 in the San Joaquin. The collection was analyzed with Vec material, Chinese material from Xinjiang, California material, El Paso material. The nastiest stuff is the El Paso material. There are 4 types. There are 2 that resemble the 4 of California and 2 that resemble 7. So that's what Jen Gao was going to show you. That has been submitted to Plant Disease. It is under review. I have begun internally speaking about the El Paso material as, you know, 4.7 or whatever. As I say, this thing closing its tail on itself, these are the things that we don't know after working with this disease for 10 years. How does the disease work? How does it infect? What does it do? We don't have a basic hypothesis of the disease, and we need it. Number 2, we have this whole problem of symptomology, which is obviously related to the etiology of the disease. Right now we have some confounding of susceptibility and species. Basically, Hirsutum and Barbadense look different, but they look different in part because the cultivars that we've been able to develop and deploy respond differently. So that's a confounding. The other thing we don't really know is the relationship of the symptomology to the reproduction. Okay? And, of course, there's also the involvement of saprophytic phase. So having said this, I have no idea how long I've spoken, but I would entertain questions for at least a couple. Can you help me with this, Travis?
You have about 5 minutes left.
I talked for 15 minutes. Oh, my God.
Well, to get back on schedule,
yes.
Which I know that's your goal.
That is my goal. You yes, thank you. Question. See? Look at this. Seeing none. All right. Yes, Margaret, hi.
Hi. Is anybody looking at, because I know in other host systems that they've got these small chromosomes that these areas can pass around. Has anybody been looking at that with race 4?
I don't know that. I don't know.
Go ahead, Leo.
Leo.
Yeah. So,
we
stand up so we can hear
you. So, we, and also Jack, almost have all the policies we perform tech biosequencing and another policy sequencing. So, we are at stage of some of our sexual function. We have the particular comparison one we saw from California versus El Paso.
I think I made a mistake and didn't hear what you said. So are we talking about constructing the genome?
Basically lineage-specific chromosomes.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So, but that demands you first assemble the de novo assemble the whole genome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So in fact, Lebo has mentioned Jeff Coleman. Jeff and I have reviewed data from the so-called Louisiana, ATC1, the Louisiana things, which we thought were root rotters and might be different, and four. Okay, Jeff tells me we will have a manuscript in January. Okay, we've done it twice, different methods. We've used the manopore method. I don't want to tell what we have, but we have, I think, a very significant finding about the genome of four, which it's Jeff's to be the senior author and do. So we would expect to have the genome of one types and four types possibly published within the next 3 to 4 months, I hope. Yes?
Just adding to that, what Jeff by Mark Davis?
Yes.
So he hasn't sequenced the El Paso isolate.
He has not.
But we sequence, but at the stage, go through the top processing and assemble the whole genome sequence. We don't know how exactly the assessment of chromosome look like, how similar they are to California isolate.
Okay.
Yeah. That we need to sort that whole mess out because we see significant differentiation in El Paso, among genotypes. So, what's Travis? I need help.
Yeah, 2 minutes left.
Jing Gao is going to lecture us for a while.
So, what's the origin of this genus?
The genus?
Yeah, what's the origin of the genus? FOP.
It's a worldwide distribution. I am not sufficiently schooled in the taxonomy to make an estimation. Four, we believe, comes from Asia. I mean, the whole genus is maybe Pangaea and tectonic plates. I don't know. I mean, I can't answer that question.
How about FOP?
You're asking me questions beyond my knowledge of this genus.
No, how about the origin of the species?
Well, that was Charles Darwin in 1858. Okay, I think we're finished here. Moving right along.